listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of LA Talk Radio, the show committed to helping people create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And that's what we're all about. Today, I'm grateful to have as a guest Meredith Bell, who has a bunch of cool stuff that she does to add good to the world. Welcome to the show, Meredith.
Thank you, Kellen. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. So, you know, we chatted a little ahead of time, and a lot of people take, you know, time at the beginning to introduce, and I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is first just ask you a question that sort of dives right into the deep end of who you are. You grow strong leaders. What is it that's happened in your life that makes you so both committed and passionate about the idea that both self-leadership and leadership in organizations is so important and such a key to growth and progress? How did you get there?
Thank you. Well, I started out as a teacher, and I fulfilled my lifelong dream of being a teacher, and realized I didn't particularly like repeating lesson plans over time. So I moved into supervision myself and learned a lot about what does it mean to lead others. But within that organization, which was still in public education, I encountered a lot of bureaucracy and politics and decided I don't thrive in that environment. So I went off on my own with the goal of helping others learn how to connect and communicate better. So this is something I've been passionate about for over 35 years. And I think part of it is just watching the dynamics, Kellen, that go on in organizations where people aren't communicating directly. There are so many issues that happen because of a lack of listening, the ability and the skill of giving feedback, and just knowing how to connect effectively with another person. So it's something I've studied and pursued myself in my own leadership and self-leadership, and also what it's seeing the benefits of working with other leaders and opening their eyes to the ways that they could be more effective with others, and seeing the changes that can happen when people realize there's a different way than how they have been interacting with others. And when they slow down and take the time to listen and actually show they care, it makes a difference. So that fed my continued desire to have a greater impact. And it's one reason why I combined my company with two other people over 30 years ago. And now we have products to scale to help reach more and more people so that less pain, less drama happens in the workplace and more positive relationships happen.
So let's take this apart a little bit. That's a fabulous explanation. You talked about personal leadership and also organizational leadership, the things that happen when we don't have it. And it's easy for us to talk about things at a conceptual level and say these things happen when we don't have good leadership or good communication. Let's go to individual leadership to start with. And if you think for a minute about your work and the work you may have done with an individual to start with, and we'll get to companies in a minute, can you give us an example of a person who is ineffective at communication? What happens because they're ineffective? And then what happens when, what is the change in awareness? So walk me through I suck at this. These things are happening. Oh, I talked to Meredith and suddenly my eyes are open and whatever. So give me an example or two of that. Okay. At a personal level.
Sure. Thinking about one fellow that was the leader of a real estate company, and he was just, he was brilliant when it came to the buildings and the structures and that sort of thing, but he wasn't as attuned into the people. He didn't know how to notice body language and people's expressions. And when he would respond in an impatient way and the impact that it had on them. And so I spent some time with him, watching him interact with some of these folks, and was able to share observations with him that he was simply not aware of. So a lot of what happened, and he was a well-meaning person, and because of that, his values were such that people are important. He just didn't realize that he was conveying a different message to them in the way he was interacting with them. So once he realized that, he started making some changes. He became less impatient in his interactions. Because you know how all the things you can do when you wish somebody would hurry up and finish, right?
I do.
Tap your fingers. All these signals that he was sending that he did not even realize he was doing. And so once he became aware of that, he could slow down, stop that, and then tune in more to the person. And it made a huge difference in their interactions.
What happened? What changed in the company or in those he worked with after he became aware of and stopped, you know, those habits of impatience, and perhaps there were other things? What happened after that?
You know, part of it is that people became more honest with him. He slowed down enough to ask them questions, find out, you know, how you're doing, to hear their side of it, because his tendency had been, you know, I've got a lot on my plate. I have so much to do. Let me give you the quick answer and move on. Instead of asking for their input and getting their ideas, so better decisions got made as a result, because he was getting their expertise, their experience into the mix of the decisions. So they felt more respected and cared about, and were more willing to speak up in other situations. So the benefit was, overall, they worked much more effectively as a team and got more done more effectively because of how they interacted with each other. And it showed with their customers. You know, they were a unit when they were having conversations with clients. And so I think that made a difference just in the whole relationships, long-term relationships with their clients as well.
Do you think, so when business people look at training or things they need to do, they always tie it to the bottom line, you know, some kind of rate of return. And when we talk about better communication and people feel more valued and all that stuff, it's all good. And we all want to feel valued. But often people say, yeah. But how much is this going to cost me? My suspicion is that it also impacted their productivity and the bottom line. Is that true?
Absolutely. Because one of the things we often overlook is, what's the cost if somebody leaves because they don't feel valued, because they are frustrated? They're being asked to do things that are just unreasonable. This accumulation of stress and unhappiness can cause someone to leave an organization. And the high price of turnover, and you know, today we have the great resignation and all these other terms for people that are simply not willing to tolerate being treated as anything but a valuable human being. And so to me, for a business owner to overlook, I don't call them soft skills. To me, these are hard business skills. They're hard because they're hard to learn and do. They're not taught in school. You know, we're never taught how to listen, how to give someone a feedback that is supportive and constructive and has them go away feeling like, yeah, this person's on my side, instead of feeling like they've been put down. So this whole idea of how we treat people is such a critical component of running a business. And I think it's short-sighted. I've heard business owners say, oh, people are the biggest problem. You know, well, if we have that attitude, they're going to sense that, you know, they're going to feel that, instead of, they are my most prized possession. I don't like calling people assets, you know, that has a thing quality to it. They're human beings that have these individual needs. And if we learn how to tap into that, it's amazing. The loyalty, the commitment, the level of performance that they are willing to give us. It's just, it's a very practical approach, actually.
You know, that's
caring.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about, you have machinery. Like, I have bought many computers over the years, and I have a recording studio, and I do video production, and you have to outfit the machine, and you buy another video card, or you do whatever, and you can get a 10% improvement in speed or decrease in rendering time, some technical drivel. And, you know, with people, that is such an unpredictable thing, but it is also so large. Like, in doing what you say, you might double someone's productivity. That's like 100%, or reduce their absenteeism, or do all kinds of stuff that is such a leveraged benefit. And so that makes me think of how big that is. Why do you think we spend so much time in the past? And I realize there's a change underway, and there's, quote, you know, a bit of awakening going on, and that's a good thing. Yay, we all think that, I hope. Why do you think we spent so much time thinking of people as the problems? And if these people would just get their crap together, why do you think we did that? And now we're finally paying the price, and we have to wake up and all that sort of thing. What do you think drove that?
Well, there's just the whole history of the Industrial Revolution and the terms that are brought into the workplace, even from, say, military, command and control. Some of the terminology that we use reinforces human capital, you know, as opposed to human beings. There's just this mindset, this attitude, this view of looking at people as just one more element, you know, of the business, and seeing it almost in the same, through the same lens as you would machinery, technology, and other, but they're not as predictable. You're right. And that's where having these skills is so, you know, these communication skills is so critical, because we need them in a way we don't need them for our machinery. It's a different kind of element that we're dealing with here with people. And I think that, unfortunately, it gets reinforced, Kellen, thinking about your question. If you go to some business meetings, you will hear business owners complain about their people. Oh, my biggest problem is with people. You know, so part of it is reinforcing it in what's talked about. But if you, it's sort of like surrounding yourself, you know, with five successful people. If you surround yourself with other business owners, like the kind of folks I interview on my podcast, who are committed to developing a culture where it's nurturing, where people support each other, where you don't have this back, you know, stabbing and this infighting going on, that people genuinely care about each other. And you know what it really boils down to is, what are the values that we are committed to and that we live by individually and within our organization, whether it's a team level if we're a supervisor, or whether it's the company wide if we're the CEO?
What do you think? So I agree with that 100%, and we've seen those changes, but you mentioned something way early, and that is about, we're not taught to listen. And I know there's now, you know, some classes that, and some thrusts in terms of management approaches that attempt to create that kind of approach to things. But there's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of, you know, still in high-end business schools where they do business case studies, you know, they don't bring in that factor in the case studies. It's about how to solve these particular problems with market share and supply and demand and, you know, production costing and all the rest. Since we know this, and it's demonstrated over and over again, and there's lots of people like you, like me, that run around and say, this is really important, wake up, and shake as many people as will listen. Why haven't we come to the place, do you think, and I realize we're thinking out loud here, but what's wrong with us? Why haven't we come to the place where we're not just talking about, but teaching, modeling, using that in case studies, role-playing, whatever it is, before we launch people into the world of creation of value, which is all business really is? We still don't do a very good job of preparing people with those kind of skills that truly value and create that productive environment. What are we doing wrong?
Well, our educational system doesn't have anything built in. So it starts way back. And our parents, you know, thinking about our own parents who typically have not had training in this area, we get exposed to ways of communicating within our own home. So we don't learn this in a formal way. And the problem is when most companies provide training, it's like in a classroom for X number of hours or days where people are exposed to information. But that doesn't mean they learn how to use it. Because as you well know, there's a big difference in knowledge and being able to apply it. And that's what one of the big things that's missing is that too many organizations have training as sort of one of those items on the checklist. And they might have these communication skills as a part of that. But if all you do in a classroom setting is teach someone, here's how you listen, and then you practice it with someone in class, but then you go back to your job and you don't ever apply it, the real issue is we are hardwired with certain ways of doing things. The brain has these physical connections. And so the way we currently listen is what's hardwired. And I'm just using that as an example. Any of the things we do and the way we interact with others are hardwired. So to think that exposing somebody for information is going to create a new pathway that's stronger than the old one, uh-uh. Think about sports. Think about any music, any area where someone has to practice in order to get really good at it. It's the same thing with these skills. And I think one of the problems is there's no follow-up after most training programs. And so people aren't held accountable. They're not asked, how are you doing with those listening skills or your feedback? Because if they're sent somewhere to be, quote, fixed, and then they come back and nothing changes, that's not going to have the long-term impact that's desired. And so one of the encouraging things for me today is some of the folks I interview on my podcast are sharing things that they're putting in place. So people get the practice, they get the coaching, they help reinforce those skills over time so the person is actually able to improve.
So when you go to a company, this drives me in two different directions, and I'll do the corporate or company one first. You're right. When I was at corporate, and I spent 30 years in different companies in the whole corporate universe, and on the private capital side and on government side and all over the place. And you go to training classes, and you know, I was a big proponent of that. I went a lot and did a lot of stuff, but you're right. You go do this thing and, you know, check, ooh, he's very active in the training programs, but it has nothing to do with your job at all. And you come back and do whatever it is you were doing. And so when you go, like, how do you fix that? So since you know that's true, and you go into a company who says, you know what, we need to fix this. Tell me what you do and how you go about changing that truth, which you just described and I've certainly experienced.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't do the consulting work anymore, but I do consult free with the clients that use our programs. And that includes consultants as well as decision makers inside organizations. And I always let them know. For instance, we have a 360 feedback tool. Well, if you're going to do feedback where people get feedback from their manager, peer, and direct reports, if that's all you do, then you might as well not do it, because that's not going to produce any more than sending somebody to a training class for a day and thinking, oh, that's it. There needs to be that follow-up piece. So I'm very honest with folks about what's required in order to help get results. And the same thing, if they're talking about using one of our tools as a part of a training program, all right, what are the other elements in your program that are going to have lasting impact? Such, because we're big proponents of peer coaching, for example. Companies can't bring in a coach for every employee. So how can we help people become peer coaches to each other so they get that support? Because when we're trying to change a behavior, why do you think Weight Watchers and, you know, some of these AA and all these other programs are so successful? Because they know how hard it is to do it on your own. Well, this is the same when we're trying to change a workplace behavior. So having somebody that's got your back, is there to support you and hold you accountable, is a very powerful way to help get those results and help make those changes. And so I think that's a key piece, is the practicing on the job and then having these periodic meetings. It could be as short as 5 or 10 minutes with somebody that cares about your success, that's checking in to see how are you doing and giving you some support, encouragement, or even advice on what you might try differently next time. And of course, ideally, the person's manager is serving as a coach, but so many managers don't embrace that role, don't identify with it, don't know how to do it. So that's another area that I encourage folks to do, is how can you move those managers to be coaches of their people, so they're helping them become better versions of themselves and therefore able to be more productive.
So it sounds like in order for this to work in a company, there has to be complete sort of buy-in. Managers, leaders have to think it. Peer coaching has to be viewed as friendly instead of backstabbing and, you know, jockeying for position and projects and promotions and things. There has to sort of be an agreement, presentation, buy-in agreement. And you said that you guys don't go do that work anymore. And so you create tools for companies that say, we want to change the universe, being the universe inside our company. And you have a set of tools and recommendations and processes for them to use. And you don't go actually on site and do the help anymore, and you provide the tools and instruction. Tell me more about how that works.
Sure. Well, let's just take an example of a healthcare system. Mm-hmm. They have programs already in place for leadership development. And so they've incorporated some of our tools into their leadership development courses, like a 360 on the front end to find out what are the person's strengths, what are possibilities for development. So the course is really tailored to what each of those people need. And then after they've left the course, maybe 6 months or 9 months later, they do a reassessment to see how are they doing back on the job. And we have these books that I mentioned on communication skills, on peer coaching, that they might also purchase and use. We have a facilitator guide that explains how to set up these partnerships, how to help the process move along. So we want to, rather than personally being involved, we want to scale and reach more organizations and more people. So I love helping them set up structures that will help them be more successful.
So if you talk about helping companies implement these things on their own with the tools and instructions that you have, and you do that so you can reach more, again, and I'm sure you've had this, people are going to look at that and say, you mean I have to train all these people and do all this stuff? Do they push back on terms of how much is this going to cost and what it's going to provide for me when they're looking at, you know, competitive pressures and costs and that sort of thing?
Sure. Well, it depends if they already are investing in development of their people. Mm-hmm. If they already are, then they have a budget for it. And our tools are very cost effective over time. I mean, books are not a big investment in that.
No.
Way they can use it with a lot of people. And the other thing is, we try to emphasize, you know, this idea of people building skills and improving over time doesn't have to take a lot of time on the part of the coach or even the manager. It's quick check-ins to ask, well, how'd it go the last week or 2 weeks when you were applying this? Let's say someone decided, man, I need to get better about not interrupting people. I'm constantly finishing their sentences and cutting them off because I want them to move along, right? That's a behavior that is very common. And so if we know we're going to be checking in with someone about how we've done in the past, let's say week, we can spend just 5 minutes talking about, here's a situation in this meeting, I cut them off and then I did apologize. And, you know, what is it they're doing? How are they applying this? That's what they need to check in about. And then the accountability coach or the peer coach is going to be listening. See, this is the beauty of doing peer coaching, is each person is practicing these communication skills with each other. And so that helps strengthen the skills. They become more effective with others because of using them with a peer coach. So it doesn't have to take a lot of time and it doesn't have to require a lot of money.
So I want to go clear to the other question that I had, which
okay.
is, and You said we learn all these things as we grow up, and they're modeled by parents and teachers and other kinds of people that influence us as youngsters and as we get ready to, you know, enter the workforce. Do you think that we're doing any better than we were, I don't know, 10, 20, 40 years ago at the, you know, raising people up so that there's less to fix, if you will, about the insecurities that cause interruption, the feeling, you know, all the things that contribute to the stories we have about how come we are the way we are? Are we doing any better or are we doing worse at the piece before you get to the company so that we're fixing less? What do you think about that?
Now, that's such a good thought-provoking question. And of course, it depends because because there are still many families that are dysfunctional, you know, where there aren't good interactions between the parents and therefore the kids are observing and picking up these behaviors and coping with what they're having to deal with. And yet, when I look at some of these young workers that are coming in and their focus on wanting work that's meaningful, wanting to be challenged, wanting to be recognized, I think that reflects, you know, a difference in what they're acquiring as they're growing up. And I, for one, think it's a good thing for people to want meaningfulness. And I think some of the younger workers are really challenging the status quo in organizations about structuring work in a way that not necessarily is opening them up for promotion, but opportunities for growth and learning. And so I think one of the things that we see is the willingness to speak up. Older folks used to think, I'm lucky to have this job. I'm not going to rock the boat. I'm not going to say anything. So that reticence to speak up. So I think in that way, that openness to say what's on their mind has to be met with someone who's not threatened by that in the workplace. I think that's so important to find out what's behind this person and tying in with you and your show, this idea of people wanting to, you know, have a purpose for themselves. And if they sense a bigger purpose in the company that they can get excited about, that makes a huge difference too. So I don't know the answer. I don't have any statistics to back whether we're better or worse. I think it depends on what is going on in the home. I can give you a personal example. I have a daughter and her husband. I have two wonderful grandchildren, and they blow me away with the way they communicate with these kids and talk to them and get them to reason and think through and start anticipating consequences of what they do before they take action. If they're an example of what's happening with many homes, I have a lot of hope.
So statistics sometimes are presented in a glum way about the deterioration of families and values and those kinds of things. But at the same time, I have a sense, and I don't have statistics either, but I have a sense that there's this increasing awareness and focus on living a meaningful life as opposed to one that simply produces the desire for things and position and coolness and everything else. And there's certainly a huge element of that that's glamorized in media and books and movies and everything else. But there seems to be this sort of upwelling of that other kind of desire. I saw a statistic where, I forgot which generation, millennials or Gen Z, said, you know, they'd rather have a cause than a job in terms of percentages that answered a particular question, which goes to what you were saying. They want to do something that's meaningful. So I'm kind of sensing that growth in a desire for meaning and a willingness to pursue it, as opposed to suffering in silence, thinking you can't have it.
And, you know, Kellen, kind of connecting all of these individual threads, one of the things that I think one of the most profound things leaders can do is to take time to get to know each person on their team as an individual. What's important to you? You know, what do you do in your spare time? Tell me about your life. Because that connects people in an important way to that leader, to the workplace, where again, they feel they matter. It's a core need that all of us have as human beings to feel that we matter. And when someone else acknowledges that by taking time for us to learn about us, it's amazing what impact that has. And I think that the more leaders become aware and they're not resistant to, I don't have time for that. You know, if they take the time to invest in having these conversations to get to know the person and what's important to them, then that saves them time over the long run, because they can address, they could assign projects, they could, you know, look for opportunities for this person to be able to really engage with what they've communicated is really important to them. There's untapped potential in so many people that it's just staggering how much potential is available to us that we don't take advantage of. And I mean, take advantage of in the best possible way.
No, I agree with you. And let's go down that road for a minute, because the show is about creating what I call the ultimate life. And I mm-hmm. define it as a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And I use prosperity instead of the word cash, because prosperity includes so much more than just material and financial mm-hmm. things. Now, you're talking about untapped stuff, which means from a business perspective, I'm leaving a ton of resources on the table. And if I'm leaving a ton of resources on the table, I'm hearing, I think, you tell me that if I got to know my people better, if I cared about them living a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy, yeah, there's going to be limitations on what I can do in the context of what our company does and has and everything else. But even with all those limitations, I'm leaving resource, loyalty, capability, and stuff on the table that is untapped if I don't take time to actually care about these people, inquire, get to know them, et cetera, et cetera. Is that what you're telling me?
I am. And, you know, there's a big difference in blocking the time and carrying out what I'm saying in a mechanical way. You know, okay, I got my time for this person. I'm going to ask these questions. People can tell when you're being genuine and you're really interested in them and when you're not. So I think it goes back to how we prepare ourselves about how we're going to show up in that conversation. And if we bring that spirit of love and service to that other person, they're going to feel it. And that to me is what makes the real difference. When people can sense that you genuinely care about them, they're more willing to trust you. They're more willing to open up. They're more willing to go to the mat for you when the, you know, the hard stuff needs to be done. They're not going to go, oh, well, it's 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. You know, they're going to do whatever it takes because of the what you have given them in to begin with in setting the stage for the relationship. And it can happen even with someone you've worked with for a long time. Because, and you know what, Kellen, a key thing is simply being honest with people and being willing to say, you know what, I realize I've kind of rushed our conversations in the past. I want to change that. I want to slow down and give you more time and give me more time with you. You know, if we just level with people about what we're doing and then enlist their help, they want us to succeed. And so if we're honest with them and, you know, just say, oh, I really did mess that up. I'm sorry. I meant to, you know, I've been working on not interrupting. I did that and I apologize. Or whatever it is you've done, to be willing to apologize and acknowledge, what it does is it creates, you know, we talk a lot about psychological safety these days. Well, mm-hmm. part of that depends on the leader modeling it for others. If the leader is never willing to admit he or she is wrong or has made a mistake, others are going to tend to hide their own mistakes. They're going to look to blame somebody else. So it creates this atmosphere of distrust and fear. Whereas if the leader says, man, I blew that, sorry, you know, and is willing to own it quickly, it's amazing the difference in how people feel in the moment with that leader and what they're willing to admit to in the future if they make a mistake.
Do you think what I'm hearing is I'm hearing, gee, the most important quality as a leader, two qualities, is number one, actually care about your people, and number two, be willing to tell the truth without hiding anything. And I'm hearing you tell me those are the two most important qualities to create good relationships, have productivity in a good workforce, probably even over whatever technical skills are involved in the job. Is that true or am I exaggerating?
Oh, it's so true. You can have all the expertise in the world. You know, you can be a technical genius, but if you're not able to interact with people, and this is one of the challenges that a lot of companies face, somebody is technically just amazing. Maybe they're the, you know, outstanding salesperson or outstanding in this particular area, but then they get promoted to a leadership role where they have no idea how to help other people achieve that level of expertise or elevate them in a way that's going to help them thrive. It sets up a situation where they fail. So I think it's very important for a leader to look at who do I need to be to bring out the best of my people, to get the maximum from them.
Sorry to interrupt you. You know, it strikes me as interesting that if we say, okay, the most important thing you can have in leadership of people is to really care about them, to love them in essence, bring that love to bear, to actually take time and slow down and listen, to admit when you're wrong and everything else, that it's the same thing that you need to be a good parent, which is the things that we're talking about before you ever get to the workplace. So what you're saying to me is the things to be a good person, whether you're parenting, whether you're having a relationship with your neighbor, or whether you're the manager or CEO of Dorkstick Company, is to be a good human being, to care, to love, to listen, to admit your mistakes and all that stuff. So it's the same across the board.
Absolutely. That's the beauty too of learning these skills. We have, I'll give you another example of a fellow that was the manager of a hotel, and he had a lot of absenteeism and other issues with non-engagement, as we call it today, right? And so he said, well, let me hire a consultant. She used our software to do a survey of the employees. And he, I don't know what he expected, but he was shocked when he found out the problems all seemed to relate to him. You know, the feedback was about him micromanaging, not trusting people. It went on and on. And to his credit, he acknowledged, man, I didn't intend to be this way. This is not my values. And yet here I am getting this feedback. He didn't deny it. He didn't, you know, push it off. He took it to heart and he invested months in working on himself. And what happened, this consultant relayed to me, is months later when she came back into the hotel, it felt different. And people were coming up to her and saying, thank you so much for your work with him, because this is fun to come, work is fun to come to now. So he made changes in himself. He made changes, therefore, in the relationships around him. Absenteeism went way down. All these people issues, I won't say they totally went away because they didn't, but they were drastically reduced. And he reported much happier family life, because when you improve a skill in one area, it has a ripple effect throughout all areas of your life.
So you've given me some really good examples. We've come to this conclusion that these soft skills are not soft. They're the critical elements of success in life, personal happiness, and leadership, both of yourself and others. So what examples or things did I not ask you that would let you fully explain how the things you've learned in your own consulting work about how we're being, who we choose to be, how we choose to truly value ourselves and others? What didn't I ask you, or what examples do you have that would be really good to drive home the truth of what it takes to live a life with purpose, prosperity, and joy?
You know, what comes to me, Kellen, is something I read in a book that I bet you're familiar with, called The Prosperous Coach, mm-hmm. by Steve Chandler and Rich Litvin. Mm-hmm. This impacted me, and it's a same thing that can impact anyone. And this has to do with being of service to others. And this was a question in the book that it was in the context of when you're having these, you know, discovery calls or whatever you want to call them, you know, initial conversations with a potential client who you might coach. How can you have a valuable conversation that really benefits them before they even, you know, hire you to be their coach? But the question was, how can I serve this person so powerfully that they never forget our conversation for the rest of their life? If we were to ask that question before any conversation that we have, it does multiple things. It invites us to focus on them and not so much judging what they say, evaluating what they say, trying to provide a ready answer if they're asking us a question, but to simply be present fully for that person. I think that conveys so much today that we're so busy with our devices, you know, and somebody says, oh yeah, I'm listening while they're scrolling through their phone. It's balderdash because you cannot consciously focus on two things at a time. It's why if I'm on a phone call, I will often close my eyes. So I'm not distracted by anything around me. So I think being fully present and asking, how can I best serve this person at this moment? And when you think about it, that they don't forget it for the rest of their life. I'm not talking about myself. If somebody is going to remember how I've been with them for a long time, you know, because if we're focused on talking about us, that's not going to touch their heart. And we want to touch people's minds and hearts in the way that we interact with them. And so truly listening to them, empathizing so they understand that we get them because of how we're listening, how we're responding by either restating in our own words what they've said or asking a meaningful question that demonstrates to them, I heard what you're saying. Now, what do you think about this? Those are elements that aspects of leadership that are most profound. And again, this applies to parents and leaders that invite people to think for themselves. We are then helping them to grow and learn. And again, it's practical for the leader because if you help people learn to think for themselves and make decisions, that's less time that they're coming to you asking about these little things that they could actually be handling themselves. And it gives you more focused time to getting the important things done. That's a lot of stuff crammed into one.
No, it's fine. I want to ask you one final question about that. And then I want you to tell me everything about how to find you. But right now, what do you think would happen if every leader in every situation thought that way before they started? I wonder what we can do in this conversation so that this person remembers how they felt, and I'm not talking about in a bad way, scream at them or something weird, but if every time a leader was having a conversation with someone that they led, that they thought, how can we do this in a way that they remember positively reinforcing their being, their opportunity, their possibilities for the rest of their life? What do you think would happen if leaders did that?
It would transform the workplace. It truly would. And we would have, I think, happier workers, happier families, because when somebody is stressed, feeling overwhelmed and unhappy at work, that takes its toll at home as well. And so I think as a society, we would be so much better off. And it would make a huge difference. And might I add one other thing that I just now remembered that I think is very important. And this goes to the word appreciate. And I learned this from Dan Sullivan, the CEO of Strategic Coach, probably over 10 years ago. And it's one of those things I was exposed to one time only, but it stuck with me because I recognized the truth of it. And that is, before you have a conversation with someone, take time to write down on a sheet of paper or at least think through in your head, what are 8 or 10 things about this person that I value? You know, so it just like we want money, you know, in the stock market to appreciate or real estate to appreciate, how can we apply that to people? How can I help another person appreciate their value How can I increase their value in my own mind? Because what he found would happen when he did that is when the person came into the room for the meeting, he didn't start telling them what he had written down. He just had that sense about him of the person's value. And so the way he interacted with them communicated to them how much he appreciated them. And the long-term impact of that is the other person's sense of their own value goes up as a result of interacting with you. And for me, that's one of my highest purposes, is helping others see the benefit of elevating someone else and what that does for their confidence, their willingness to give their best. And it just has a ripple effect.
I love that. So I would say, gee, what can I do so that this conversation appreciates, meaning augments or grows, your own sense of value of yourself, your contribution, and everything else? So that's a good thought and a good reminder. I want to make sure that right now we take an opportunity to tell everybody where to find what you do, how to find the things you've written or your materials, work, you know, websites, everything. Tell us everything so people can find you.
Thank you. Well, it's one easy place, growstrongleaders.com. We have information there about our two books, Connect with Your Team, Mastering the Top 10 Communication Skills, and Peer Coaching Made Simple. We also have our products there, the assessment and development tools that we've created. And it's also where my podcast is. It's also called Grow Strong Leaders. So if you remember that, you can find your way to everything else that we offer. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook as well.
LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and growstrongleaders.com. So if you thought about this consistency between what is powerful for individuals, what is powerful in families, the focus on having everything done from a place of actual caring and love instead of pretend, or instead of thinking about myself in any interaction, and then overlay that last piece that you said of how can I have this conversation so that a person's self-worth appreciates, their vision of opportunities appreciates, meaning grows. If you think about all that, what would you have for me and the listeners as a final thought? You've been at this a long time. You have a lot of wisdom and a lot of capability and a lot of case studies. So tell me what I need to think about as I end this, our conversation together.
Well, besides the being fully present, giving someone your attention, listening with your mind and your heart, asking questions that draw them out, I would say another piece is trusting them. Because when we extend trust to another person, most people want to do their best and they don't like being constricted to this tiny box. And so if we can demonstrate, I trust you to do this, and we're giving them the opportunity to prove themselves, then that expands their beliefs about what's possible and expands our beliefs about them and what they can do. And I think that grows relationships in such a powerful way that, I would say, start with one person that you could extend trust to, one person that you could be more fully present with, whether it's someone at home or at work. What are some of the aspects of what we've talked about today that you could actually start practicing with one person? Because if you get good at it with one person, it's going to naturally extend to others. But who is that really important person in your life where if you were to do these things with them, your relationship would improve, grow, expand? That would be my suggestion, is start with that person.
That's fabulous. So the idea there, if I'm understanding this correctly, is trust. Demonstrate your trust. Give them the thing, the reins, the emphasis or the expression of trust, so they can show you that they truly want to do their best. Because I believe you, and I see the same thing. People really want to do well. They want to do well. Meredith, mm-hmm. I want to thank you today for showing up with us, for being here, for sharing with us all the stuff you've learned over a good career of helping people love, lead, and be their best.
Thank you.
You're absolutely.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.